This podcast is brought to you by Local Silver Mint in Ware, New Hampshire. For the best selection of silver and gold, visit the Local Silver Mint showroom in tax-free New Hampshire today. Online at localsilvermint.com.
Sugar, spice, and everything nice. These were the ingredients chosen to create
The Grace Curley Show. Radio, TV, print, Grace Curley does it all.
She sings, she dances, she acts.
I'm waiting by the door for my Pulitzer.
She sounds hideous.
She's just the worst.
Yeah, she's a wacko.
She is the devil. I'm in hell.
Now, here's the millennial with the mic.
She still leaves me both breathless and speechless.
I love her.
She is the best.
Somebody will ask you to say Grace.
Grace Curley.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Grace Curley Show, and a happy Friday to all of you. Thank you so much for joining us today, kicking off your weekend right with The Grace Curley Show. I want to start with the awful news. 6 U.S. service members confirmed dead following an aircraft crash in western Iraq. This is from CENTCOM. We don't have all the details yet. They are confirming, though, that the aircraft was lost while flying over friendly airspace, and the crash was not due to hostile fire or friendly fire. So that's what we know so far. They give 24 hours to notify the family out of respect for them so that they don't see it, you know, first thing on the news. And we're waiting for more information about that. The other big story of the day. So DHS continues to struggle here as the Democrats and the people in the media are covering for them, but the Democrats are prolonging this completely unnecessary and pointless shutdown. The part of the shutdown that is so scary is that we've had 3 terror attacks in less than a week. Started on Saturday on that abnormally warm day, as CNN described it, when 2 teenagers, one of whom used to sell sneakers, according to the New York Times, when they entered New York City and instead of playing Frisbee, they decided to throw a Mother of Satan bomb at protesters. Now, luckily, the bombs were not effective. No one was killed. Every situation I'm about to go through with these terror attacks, by the way, a very important thing to remember is they could have been so much worse. There could have been so much more carnage than what we're seeing. And in a lot of cases, like the one in Michigan, it's a miracle that it wasn't worse. And I think a part of the reason why it's a miracle, but it's also because the Jewish people have been ready for this. They are very aware of the fact that they are oftentimes the target of these kind of attacks, and they are not afraid to keep themselves armed, pay for security, and be ready for any kind of horrific anti-Semitism and violence coming their way. So thank God for that, because this preschool, somehow there was no children who were harmed in this, and no security guards were killed either. We're going to get to all that, but I got to talk about the tie-in here between the government, the partial government shutdown, because Chuck Schumer, talk about a dirtbag. Chuck Schumer. I mean, this is someone who knows how tense things are right now, how volatile things are, how we are in a conflict in the Middle East. And you would think that he would be particularly sensitive to the anti-Semitism and what we're facing here on U.S. soil. And instead, because he wants to make the point that, like, oh, you know, Trump and ICE are bad, he's willing to put us all at risk. He's willing to make the country less safe to try to score a political win against Donald Trump. And I got to say, I heard, I think it was Dana Perino mentioned this the other day, and I keep kind of running it through in my mind. It's particularly stupid. Not just like, oh yeah, it's immoral, you know, to sacrifice the safety of the Americans that you claim to care so much about so that you can, you know, maybe appease the far left part of your party that hates you, Schumer. Like, they hate you. I'm just here to tell you. You're never going to win with them. You're out. You're gone. All of this stuff. I don't know how many Americans you're willing to sacrifice here so that maybe you can impress AOC or Ilhan Omar, but it's never going to work. They're never going to like you. And you should just accept that instead of groveling like this and embarrassing yourself. But beyond that, what we have here is a fight about a particular issue being ICE that no one's really focusing on right now. Have you noticed that? Has Chuck Schumer noticed that? I guess people are a little distracted from the terrorist attacks that are happening in the war in the Middle East, but ICE isn't the center. And you can, you know, you can come at me and say, well, that was the whole reason for the conflict in the Middle East. That's why they wanted to distract from this and that. You can claim the distractions whatever you want. My only point is, I'm not sure that there's a win here for Schumer in this. I mean, best case scenario, everyone is stuck at the airport and he's a pain in the ass. And the Democrats are just inconveniencing everyone. That's best case scenario. You're trying to go on spring break and you're in the parking lot at the Houston airport. You're waiting 5 hours to get
on that
TSA.
Bike in your shorts.
That's best case scenario. Worst case scenario is what we're seeing, but it could get a lot worse. We have a massive terror attack here in the U.S., and I pray to God that does not happen. But you know what would be more, probably in this case, more logical than just me praying to God it doesn't happen, is if Chuck Schumer was funding the government and actually gave the thumbs up that, hey, we're going to put politics aside here because there's a lot of danger out there. And you can't, I keep hearing these, like I saw a former FBI specialist today on TV, and she said, you know, people have to keep their heads on a swivel. Don't be in your phones. You know, be paying attention. If you see something, say something. Live fearlessly but cautiously, or something like that. And it was reminding me of after 9/11 when they said, you know, if you don't go to the mall, if you don't go to concerts, the terrorists win. And I understand that mindset. But I'll be honest, I wouldn't advise someone right now to go to like a parade, or, and I don't even know how many of those things are happening, but to be in a big crowd. And maybe that's me letting the terrorists win, but it's like, I just, the government's not even being fully funded.
Well,
they're happening all the time.
If something does happen and you lose your life or someone's life that you love, any loss of life, that's, you lose. That's
right.
Stay home. It's the safer thing to do.
And it's also just, if that does happen, I hate even playing this game. I honestly hate playing this game. But if that does happen, does Chuck Schumer think he's going to be able to go, the reason there was a terrorist attack is because of Donald Trump? Like, does that help him sleep at night? Does that help these Democrats sleep at night? Is, oh, when we lose all these Americans, we'll just blame Trump. Okay. It seems like we should have a little bit more concern for the safety of the American people than just, well, our get out of jail free card is we'll blame the president. Now, I'm talking about these attacks. I'm talking about this. And I want to actually focus here on what they want, because their goal is to get Trump, I don't know, to abolish ICE. What else do they want? Like, Trump did make a little bit of concessions, and I know a lot of the MAGA base didn't want him to, but he said, all right, we'll pull these people out of Minnesota. We'll pull ICE. We'll draw down. I mean, they're not completely out of Minnesota, just like they're not completely out of any state. But a significant reduction in ICE agents in Minnesota. We're not going to do these kind of very open kind of raids. And we'll let your offals in the area keep the rapists in their communities for a little while, if that's going to keep you guys sane, okay? If that's going to keep you from attacking our agents, fine. We'll do these in a little bit more of a specified way so that we don't have crazy white women hurling themselves at our vehicles. But he made a few concessions. Kristi Noem's fired. I'm not saying he did that to appease Chuck Schumer, but I think there was kind of a cocktail of different reasons why Kristi Noem had to go. But there are things here that Chuck Schumer could say, and if he was a smart politician, he would. All right, we're taking that as a win. Grab it, fund the government, and say, victory, victory, victory. Look what I did. Look what I did. Look what I got. Kristi Noem's fired. They're out of Minnesota. Like, he could spin this and still fund the government. But his end goal here, to me, is never going to happen. Like, what do you want? You want Trump to sign a piece of paper saying he's abolishing ICE? They keep saying, we want them to change the practices. Well, you wanted body cams. Trump said, all right, we'll give them body cams. It's like anything else. If you go into a negotiation I remember one time someone told me this, someone who was, I think he was like a lawyer, he does contracts and stuff like that. He said, I never agree to go into a negotiation for someone if there's nothing they could get that they would accept. Like, if in your mind there's no winning you over, then what are we doing here? You said you want concessions. You said things have to change. You got a number of those things and you're still not happy. So
I tell Flo, I tell you things, you tell me things.
So now what I want to drill down on is what's happening because of this. And we have, let's go over them. So we had the two bombers inspired by ISIS who threw the Mother of Satan bomb at protesters. The media tried to spin that like they were attacking Mayor Mamdani, Abby Phillip, oopsies, Anna Navarro, oopsies, everyone's making mistakes. Then we had the attack at Old Dominion University yesterday carried out by a 36-year-old ISIS sympathizing. See, I'm not sure. You have ISIS sympathizers. You have people who are inspired by ISIS. I can't get into the difference. All I know is the word ISIS coming up a lot in these stories. We've got the ISIS sympathizing shooter, Mohammed Baylor Jallo, who allegedly shouted Allahu Akbar as he opened fire on an ROTC classroom. He killed Lieutenant Colonel Brandon Shaw, who I was reading about his military career, highly distinguished, highly decorated patriot, professor of military science at Old Dominion University, by all accounts, just a wonderful human being, and was killed by this monster. Unarmed students and Shaw rushed Jallo and took him down, unalived him, as one of the officials said. Now, that's Old Dominion. We also had the Michigan terrorist, Ayman Mohammed Ghazali, 41-year-old Lebanese national, was brought in under the, was given his citizenship or whatever it is when Obama was president, tried to massacre Jewish students at a preschool in Michigan. Temple Israel in West Bloomfield, security guards killed him, thank the Lord. Car was full of explosives. Ghazali became a citizen under the Obama administration. He lived in Dearborn Heights. And it's being reported a lot that his family members, that he had like four or five family members who were killed in an Israeli airstrike in Lebanon. And because anti-Semitism is currently, and it's been, it's always an issue, but right now it's at a real boiling point. There seems to be an attempt, and I saw it today in the Globe, I've seen it in a couple of places, to kind of rationalize why this man plowed his car into a Jewish preschool by throwing out that, well, his family was killed in an Israeli airstrike in Lebanon. Okay, so he thought that killing a bunch of three-year-olds was somehow going to make things better, or he thought that that justified him ramming a car full of explosive devices into a preschool. No. Nope. Not an excuse. Sorry. I know you guys keep peppering it in like it's going to make me, let me handle this with a little bit more nuance. No. No, thank you. Mamdani now, Ilhan Omar, other prominent anti-Semites in the Democrat Party, anti-Semitic stars, you might say. They're rushing to their Twitters to pretend that they condemn these kind of acts, that they're very upset about it. They're like, oh, it just must be exhausting every time you see one of these things. And what they want to write is like, globalize the Intifada. But instead they have to write, well, of course, any kind of hate. They have to do the most mushy, like vanilla. Any kind of hate is bad. Of course, we condemn all hate. Violence is never the answer. Wink, wink. And somebody, and we can talk about this in a little bit, but well, David Harsanyi was responding to it saying, this is globalized the Intifada. Like, as Mayor Mamdani had such trouble condemning the phrase globalize the Intifada, this is globalizing the Intifada. So if you couldn't condemn that, why do you have such an easy time condemning this? This is the result of what you thought was like, well, you know, language is there. People have different opinions and I'm not going to tell people what they can and cannot. Here it is. Here it is.
I'm against crime and I'm not ashamed to admit it.
Yeah, they're not very, when it's a white supremacist MAGA supporter, very specific in their language. Very specific. When it's someone plowing a car into a preschool full of Jewish babies, not so much. all of a sudden things get very vague. Things get very, you'd be reading it. You'd be like, what is this even about? There's nothing in here. There's no details to grasp onto. But Dave Portnoy from Barstool, I thought, summed this up really well. And his point, and we can get into it in the next segment, is just, if you're going to hate the Jews, like, just do it with your full chest. You know, like, he almost has more respect for the wife of Mamdani, who's just liking posts on social media celebrating October 7th. At least she's honest about it. You have Mamdani, who clearly feels the same way as her and clearly shares a lot of her same beliefs, but he has to come out with this kind of half-ass, well, of course I'm upset by this. No, you're not. No, you're not. I just want everyone to be honest about who they are. This is who you are. You wouldn't condemn globalizing the Intifada. You know, you have Mahmoud Khalil, an anti-Semite. You bring him in for the VIP treatment at Gracie Mansion. You tried your best to obfuscate what actually happened with the two ISIS-inspired bombers because you didn't want to make them look bad. Stop trying to fool everybody with this, like, act of, oh, I'm very sad about what happened. The anti-Semitic attack, it makes me very sad. Yeah, I'm sure you're losing a lot of sleep over it. All right, when we get back, we'll cover all of this. It's 844-500-4242, and this is The Grace Curley Show.
Watch the show live, rumble.com/TheGraceCurleyShow. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone. Today's poll question is brought to you by the Eden Pure Thunderstorm OxyLeaf 3 Air Purifier. BOGO is back. Get ready for allergy season. Go to EdenPureDeals.com and use code GRACEBOGO to buy one Thunderstorm and get another free. That's EdenPureDeals.com. Use code GRACEBOGO. Taylor, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at GraceCurlyShow.com, is when will Chuck Schumer cave and end the current government shutdown? By the end of the month? By Memorial Day, by Independence Day, or he's going to drag this out for as long as he can.
The last time he did this, the TSA is the big thing because that creates the bottlenecks at the airport where nobody can get through and the lines. And it all depends on the airport because at some airports, the TSA agents are still showing up. God bless them. And at other ones, they're saying, hey, and you know what the part of this that I think is important to note is, like, yeah, they will get paid again once it reopens. But for some of these people, they might have a mortgage and they might say they probably do. And they're probably saying, hey, like, it's nice that you're going to pay me eventually, but I have a payment due in 2 weeks. So I'm going to have to go Uber Eats it over here because you're not paying me. So in some places, the airports are trying to offset that. I saw today a guy on from, I think, the Denver airport who was saying, you know, we're giving gift cards. We're trying to keep them there. We're trying to entice them to stay working. But at other places, people are just walking off and they're saying, you know, call me when the money's back. I think that airports, though, those are the things that tend to get the Democrats closer to caving. The last time they caved on a shutdown, it was the airports. It was that people started, I think, calling them saying, hey, I'm here for 6 hours. What's going on?
Are people like trying to bribe in the lines, the TSA agents?
Oh, like slip them a 20?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I think that would, during a shutdown, I think that would work. That's front of the line.
I don't know. I feel like that would never even cross my
mind. What are they
going
to do, fire the TSA agents for working for free?
And I know this is not a time to come at TSA agents, and I'm not trying to, but TSA agents are typically not in a great mood. I cannot imagine the moods of the TSA, because I come into that line, and they're already, computer's out! Take your tablets out! Can't have that water bottle! They're already mad. So right now, it must be like, you must be in that line saying, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut. Don't yell at me.
I'd try it. I'd slip them a 50. If it doesn't work, I'm out $50.
Have you ever done that in a restaurant?
No.
You're not doing it. You're not going to do it at the TSA if you've never even done it in a restaurant. You haven't even practiced it yet.
I think maybe I have.
You definitely have. I feel like every man has at some point, right? It's like what makes you a man. You'll be a man, my son. This is what you got to do. You got to slip him a 20.
89%, by the way, say he's going to drag this out for as long as possible.
I hope you are wrong. This is the New York Times' new spin on the ISIS-inspired bombers in New York City. At 13, he was selling sneakers. At 18, he's facing terror charges. And whose fault is that? We'll be right back.
Grace Curley Show is on the air.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. Oh, I forgot. I said, you know, I don't know if there's any parades. I forgot the Southie Parade. Yeah, well, I'm sure all of the powers that be are being extra conscientious of the high risk. I think every single state and governor and mayor are focusing on this because it's very scary. It's a very scary time. And 617 said, you're scaring me. I don't mean to. I'm just looking at the reality here, which is we've had three terror attacks since Saturday. And as much as the carnage of those attacks was, it's awful, but it was minimal compared to what it could have been. It doesn't take away the frightening factor. I wanted to, we were just talking about whether or not you can slip the TSA agents a 20. And Taylor, you do remember doing this at one point in your life. This man, if you're out there and you think, you know, I could write a book, I've lived a pretty interesting life, sit down and shut up. Because this guy right here is an international man of mystery. Just when you think you got him figured out, he throws a complete curveball. I said, Taylor, have you ever slipped anyone a 20? He goes, I don't think so. I said, of course you have. You must have. And then you came out with this gem.
I think I may have. This may be a false memory, but I may have slipped a 20 to the hostess at a Texas Roadhouse once. It was like an hour-long wait, if I'm remembering correctly.
I think at chains, they probably have pretty specific rules. And then once Taylor said that, I remembered back in the old days. Here's a little treat for you guys. Here's a little trip down memory lane. Back in the old days, when I was working as a young hostess at Jerry Remy's, and I gotta tell this. So I was a hostess at Jerry Remy's. Being a hostess, if you've ever been a hostess at a restaurant, it is one of, I'm not gonna say the hardest jobs, but it's one of the worst jobs going. It's like, you don't make a lot of money. The servers hate you. Well, I just eat that family in my section. Everyone's yelling at you all the time. But I worked there, and people would come in sometimes, and we'd like have Bruins game. It was a hot spot just because of the location. People would try to slip me a 20, and I would be like, I don't even want this, like, at this point. I'm so miserable. For me to try to find you a table in this circus of a restaurant is not going to be worth the $20 for me. Just get out of, you know what? I would give you the $20 to not want to eat here. I will give you $20 to go find another place to eat, because the thought of trying to place you somewhere in a restaurant that has a 4-hour wait makes me insane. And one other thing I'll add in is I was the new hostess, you know, and when you're the new hostess, you're the shiny new hostess. Everyone's like, oh, look who it is. Oh, she's cool. What's her thing? And then another new hostess came in after me, way cooler than me. Everyone loved her. You know what she started to do? She started to boss me around. I was the senior hostess, and she said to me, can you go check on the bathrooms? Can you go check on the bathrooms and see if they need toilet paper? You know what I said?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I walked over. I said, sure, whatever. I really, at that point, had lost.
Is Jerry Remy's that good where there was a 4-hour wait?
No, it wasn't good at all.
No.
It was just the location.
Olive Garden of sports restaurants.
You're in Boston. You're on the water. People just, you know, they could get away with the location for as long as they could, but miserable. Do not suggest it. Do not work as a hostess if you can avoid it. And to the hostesses out there, keep going. I got you. I got your back here at the Grace Curley Show. All right, now I wanted to play a cut of Pete Hegseth because there's been some rumors. And the Iran's new Ayatollah, the Nepo baby impotent. I don't know why impotent is a hard word for me lately. It's like I want to say a different word, impotent. And I was trying to do some research. I'm like, how do they know that about him? Turns out he went to some hospital, I think, in London to try to get treatment. And then word got out. So much for HIPAA. Word got
Donald
out.
John Trump incited the erection.
And now it's everywhere. Now everyone's talking about it all the time. But he's trying to claim that the claims of his demise are greatly exaggerated. Like, he's trying to tell everybody, I'm fine. I'm fine. Yes, I haven't been seen in person. Yes, I'm sending out a cardboard cutout. But trust me, at home, I'm doing great. Everything's A-okay. Pete Hegseth has a different idea of what's actually happening. Let's have cut four, please.
We know the new so-called not-so-supreme leader is wounded and likely disfigured. He put out a statement yesterday, a weak one, actually, but there was no voice and there was no video. It was a written statement. He called for unity. Apparently killing tens of thousands of protesters is his kind of unity. Iran has plenty of cameras and plenty of voice recorders. Why a written statement? I think you know why. His father, dead. He's scared, he's injured, he's on the run, and he lacks legitimacy. It's a mess for them. Who's in charge? Iran may not even know.
Yeah, I saw a great headline in the Babylon Bee. It said, Iran asked Democrats for tips on running country with dead leader. It seems like Pete Hegseth might be onto something. And something else I want to say about Hegseth, because he's been delivering these press conferences, and something I've noticed about him, and I don't know if it was because of when he was being confirmed, he had to go through a really mudslinging, kind of gross process. He was accused of being an alcoholic, womanizer, all these things. And it got pretty messy there for a minute. He hates the media almost, I would say, or at least the way he presents himself and the way he talks to them, he hates them as much as Trump. Like, he hates these people.
They don't like him either.
No. You know why?
Because he was one of them?
Nope. And it's going to answer a lot of questions for people in life. I'll tell you why. Because he's so good looking. That's why a lot of these people hate him. Because he's good looking. And it's like, sorry, that's, you got to deal with it, okay? It's not his fault he looks like an action figure. And he's doing a good job. Sorry he can't be Lloyd Austin and go AWOL on us for a couple days and not let anyone know.
More of the crabs in a bucket analogy, where they just hate seeing one. Have you not heard of that?
Oh, like they hate seeing one get out?
Yes. So they pull him down. But this one, this crab,
this crab got out of the bucket. Yeah, well, the funny thing is that with a lot of Trump people, it's like they do the opposite. They are in media and then they go into these cabinet positions or these high up positions in the administration. A lot of times with the Biden people, it's like they wanted to do the opposite. They wanted to become the Pete Hegseth. So when they saw him leaving his weekend morning show host gig, they were like, whoa, dude, you're doing this the wrong way. Like Dan Bongino, for example, huge podcast, goes to the White House, goes to the FBI. He's now back at his podcast. But I think a lot of people were looking at that, Taylor, and they're like, you're doing it reverse. You're supposed to do one of these jobs that no one wants to do. And then try to make a lucrative podcast.
Right.
That's the recipe. Okay, but back to Pete Hegseth here for a second, because he filled us in on a few different things. And I want to play here, I want to play the conversation about the Strait of Hormuz and also Iran's Navy. This is cut 8.
I want to emphasize what the chairman said about that. The only thing prohibiting transit in the Straits right now is Iran shooting at shipping. It is open for transit should Iran not do that. Now, there's a reason why we chose, as one of our primary objectives, destroy the Navy. We understood the ability to interdict shipping is something Iran has done for 40 years. It's key terrain. They've used it as leverage. The world is seeing what they'll do to fight back in that context. And so we've heard them talk about taking various measures, and we're planning for all of them. So we have a plan for every option here. We're working with our interagency partners, and that's not a strait we're going to allow to remain contested or with a lack of flow of commercial goods. So we're aware of that. We're laser focused on our military objectives, but also want to make sure our partners across this government understand we're working with you to make sure that energy flows, and that's an important part.
Yeah, and I've seen these accusations that the Trump administration wasn't prepared for this. And even if you have the lowest opinion of the Trump administration, which a lot of the people in our media do, like Chuck Todd and all these other people who are saying they don't have a clear picture of what's going on in Iran. Oh, do you, Chuck? Please fill us in. What does it look like from your perch in your basement with your with your webcam? Let us know. Tell us through the podcast equipment. What is the view of Iran right now? But a lot of these people have a very low opinion of the Trump administration. But you have to have a delusional opinion of any White House to think that when we have a conflict in Iran, they're not worried about that strait. Where a fifth of the oil moves in and out of. You have to think they are insane. And that's the problem, is a lot of people are looking at this administration. They can't get past their own hate. So they're coming out with these reports that, like, they weren't ready for this. They weren't ready for the Strait of Hormuz to be affected by a conflict in Iran.
Right. Any conflict in Iran, that's Iran's first move. They put up a blockade. Nobody's getting through. price of oil skyrockets till somebody caves.
Right.
And then it's opened back up after negotiation.
And most people do cave. Most presidents do cave. And, you know, most administrations go, this is getting a little too dicey for me. But the other part of it, Taylor, is that the only thing I think that has caught this administration by surprise when it comes to like tactical or anything to do with the actual conflict is the fact that these countries in the Middle East that have been hit are so willing to turn on Iran and are kind of united in how they feel about Iran and being okay with Iran being taken down. I think that surprised the administration. I didn't think they thought a lot of these Gulf countries were going to be like, yeah, let's do it. Like, we're in. And so in that sense, it's a surprise, but it's a good surprise. It's not a bad surprise. Now, listen to Scott Bessent, because, again, you can convince me of a lot of things. Like, you want to convince me that the administration is nervous about the midterms. You want to convince me that Susie Wiles is trying to figure out ways, different messaging. I could believe some of this, but I cannot believe that Scott Bessent doesn't have an A plan, a B plan, and a C plan, just because I've seen this guy operate, and he's always prepared, he's always calm, he's always measured, and he's very smart. So listen to Scott Bessent talk about the Strait of Hormuz. This is Cut 11.
It is my belief that as soon as it is militarily possible, the U.S. Navy, perhaps with an international coalition, will be escorting vessels through.
And that came up just now in the Situation Room.
Your words, not mine. But we've been planning for this. We've done scenario analysis, you know, for months, for weeks. Leading into this, so.
But it's a prospect in the coming days, then.
It is a prospect as soon as, you know, we have complete control of the skies and are degrading they have no air force. The Navy is sunk, literally and figuratively, and the munitions factories, the rebuilding capabilities for the missiles, the completely degraded. So as soon as it is possible for safe passage, we will do it.
Now, if you're curious what the state is right now with Iran's military, with their communication abilities, Secretary of War Pete Hegseth, I'm kind of ping-ponging here from different members of the administration, but he laid that out as well in his presser. Can I get cut one, Taylor?
Start, as we often do here at the Department of War, with the bottom line up front. For the world to hear and the press to actually admit that the United States is decimating the radical Iranian regime's military in a way the world has never seen before. Never before has a modern, capable military, which Iran used to have, been so quickly destroyed and made combat ineffective, devastated. We said it would not be a fair fight, and it has not been.
Yeah, and I just wanted to go back here to the Strait of Hormuz just for one second, because I thought this was important. There was a story out on CNN. Top Trump officials acknowledged to lawmakers during recent classified briefings that they did not plan for the possibility of Iran closing the strait in response to strikes, per three sources. Caroline Levitt responds to that. This story is 100% fake news. CNN decided to run this garbage based on three anonymous sources familiar with discussions. This is despite the fact that myself, the Secretary of War, the Secretary of State, and multiple lawmakers have directly disputed this false reporting. The truth? The Pentagon has been planning for Iran's desperate and reckless closure of the Strait of Hormuz for decades. And it has been part of the Trump administration's planning well before Operation Epic Fury was ever launched. She goes on in more detail. But this kind of reporting that we keep seeing, we see it from ABC with the plot in California, they don't care if it's fake. They just want to get the story out. Then they'll get shot down by Caroline Levitt and other members of the administration, and they're on to the next. They're just on to the next one. We'll be right back. I want to talk a little bit about Mrs. Mamdani, about the private citizen who has a penchant for liking tweets that celebrate October 7th. That's not the only thing. It turns out she's a bit of an artist, Taylor. She likes to draw. Doodle. I don't know how you'd describe it. I'll let you look at the picture. You could decide. It's easy to put things off. I'll do that in the new year. I'll worry about that when the weather gets warmer. I'll fix that later this month. But sometimes all it takes is one step to get the ball rolling. I'm going to see Perfect Smiles on Monday. Very excited about this. I'm getting the nubs off. Do you know what that means, Taylor?
You're getting the nubs off?
When you have Invisalign, you have these little nubs on your teeth. They don't hurt, and they're I'm sure you probably haven't noticed them. They're pretty hard to see. But I get them taken off, which is the last step of my Invisalign. So I am officially at the end of my journey, and I'm so happy with my smile. I love my teeth. And it was just a little tweak, but it was something that I had thought about a lot. And I think a lot of you can probably relate to this, where you look at your smile, there's something that bothers you. And sometimes it bothers you for decades, whether it be they're not white enough, they're not straight enough, they're not exactly what I want, or I need to get them cleaned. Whatever your problem is with your teeth, and even if you don't know a problem, you're just not happy and you want to figure that out, Perfect Smiles can help you on that journey. I showed up at Perfect Smiles. I said, my bottom teeth are crooked. They said, we're going to straighten out all of your teeth. And since then, my bite has been more aligned. I haven't had jaw pain. So you'll be surprised that when you work on one thing, it can have positive effects on so many other parts of your smile. Don't wait an extra week or even an extra day. Call them today. Just make the first call for that first appointment. You will be shocked how easy and quickly things get moving from there. It's 603-595-6699 or go to perfectsmiles.com. Again, that's 603-595-6699, and we'll be right back.
More of the Grace Curley Show up next. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Oh, I like this. All right, I want to read, before I get into Zohran's wife, who we know, she's a private person, except for the magazine interviews. She's very private. There was a great tweet today by Dave Portnoy, and it was about this kind of fake apology that Zohran and Ilhan Omar and other anti-Semites keep giving. And sorry, I'm just going to pull it up here, because Zohran's wife is in the news again today. So he said, he retweeted Zohran's, oh, I'm so upset about this hate crime against this temple. And he said, you know what? When there are terrorist attacks in the U.S. by extremists, I prefer that the same politicians and podcasters who egg them on with nonstop inflammatory rhetoric and by endorsing Hamas rallies, and who refuse to condemn phrases like globalize the Intifada, and who blame everything on the Jews, don't then try to act surprised or sympathetic when these attacks happen. It's insulting, and you're not fooling anybody. I'd rather Mamdani be more like his wife, who probably already smashed the like button a billion times and threw a party at Gracie Mansion. At least she owns it. Give me the straightforward hate rather than the hypocrisy. And I wanted to talk about Zohran's wife because there's a new story in the Free Beacon by John Levine. Zohran Mamdani's wife provided illustration for essay by author who called October 7th spectacular and who attacked Jewish supremacist vampires. And that's not all that this woman, Susan Abulhawa, has written about Jewish people. She also called them, she described a pro-Israel commentator as a lying Jewish supremacist cockroach and bemoaned dual loyalty Zionists. She also used the term Israelis are rootless, soulless ghouls. And in September called Israel a cultureless, rootless human aberration in the form of a manufactured nation, adding that we live in the time of Jewish supremacist demons. To which Rama Duwaji said, can I draw a cartoon for you? I would really like to illustrate something for you. I'm really liking what you're putting out there into the world. When we come back, Eric Swalwell in the news for his living situation. We'll talk about that. We have so much more to get into. It's Friday, people. And it's The Grace Curley Show.